Well, hi everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Recovery Jam. Welcome to the new people. Especially, it's the beginning of January. And I know it's a very common time. People show up at meetings they haven't come to before or meetings that they haven't been attending recently. And generally, I know for myself, New Year's were always filled with a piece of hope and sometimes empty wishful thinking, and so I want to speak to the hope and not the empty wishful thinking, because I spent years wishing in empty wishful thinking, and but when I was given a lot of desperation and a little sprinkling of hope, I began to take action. And it's really in the action that the wishful thinking, moves to something much greater. So that's my hope tonight. And, whenever I see new people, I really try to remember what I felt like when I was new to a meeting. And in my experience, when I had returned to Overeaters Anonymous yet again, for the millionth, it felt like the millionth time, it was painful to make eye contact. That was the truth for me. I went to a meeting and I sat in the back, and I kept my head down and the tears just like flowed, from my eyes. And although it's not related to the topic, it just that's just what I started thinking about tonight when I saw so many new people. And what happened for me at that particular meeting, the one where it just seemed to, this is the meeting that I have a strong memory of. I was greeted with a tremendous amount of love, and that I didn't hear things that made me feel like I was beneath anybody. I didn't feel like I didn't have the right to be there, because before that, I judged myself always based on the size of my body, and that if I somehow took up more space, more physical space, my value was less. That's how I felt. And what struck me at that particular meeting was that was not my experience there. I felt very much, even though I still had this terrible looming thought in my brain that my value was definitely related to the size of my bottom, I knew that there was something wrong with that information there. And what I got from the people that greeted me there was just love and acceptance. And then a woman stood up and she was, to me, she looked beautiful. She was wearing a suit. I just remember that. I remember her shirt tucked in to the waist of her dress, of her skirt. And I couldn't imagine what was this woman doing at this meeting. Had no idea what was she speaking, why was she here? And then out of her mouth came my story. And she started talking about stealing candy. And, and the tears then really flew from my eyes. Because I knew I was home, and when you hear that information that you're home, that's just a powerful way to start. And so I just hope that anybody that's here tonight feels like you're home, that you feel like you have a seat here with us. And my sincere desire is just for everybody to be that woman with their shirt tucked in their skirt, right? Someday telling the story, giving someone else a piece of hope, making them feel like they're home. So tonight my topic is about strengthening spirituality. Last week I spoke about faith, growing our faith, and It was supposed to be growing our faith and strengthening our spirituality. But the growing of our faith took an hour. and so I didn't want to rush it because the spirituality is such an important component too. And so for those that are new, I'm going to kind of just do a quick recap about what is faith, right? What is it anyway, so that we can sort of lean right into the next part of this. You know, faith is the complete trust or confidence in something or someone. And some words that are similar is trust, belief, confidence, conviction, reliance, dependence, optimism, hopefulness, and expectation. And the opposite of faith is mistrust, right? So faith is an internal belief, and it's actually more than a belief. It is the knowledge. It's the absolute certainty that our needs are going to be met. And that even if our needs are not met, that ultimately I'm going to be taken care of. Faith can be described as a certainty that we're not alone. And in order to recover, you have to lose your faith in yourself, which that's what step one is about. And we begin to have faith in the only thing that can save us. And for us, that realization is step two, is that there's going to be a power greater than ourselves that can restore us. So that's what faith is. And we spent a lot of time, if you're interested in looking at and listening to that and you missed it, you'll catch the recording where I spoke about growing our faith. And tonight, I'm going to really talk about strengthening my spirituality, right? And so, you know, first of all, I'm going to try to answer a couple of things. One is, why do we have to focus on strengthening spirituality? Why do we have to actually strengthen it at all? And the other question is, like, what is that anyway? What is spirituality? It seems like such a kind of esoteric, lofty term, and what does it mean for us? So in I'm going to try to answer first why we have to have it, right? In We Agnostics, on page 44, it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. So why focus on spirituality? Because I only have two choices. I'm either going to do it, or I'm going to die, right? Because this is a fatal malady. And basically, I know that sounds drastic, but when I was clearly out of options, I surrendered my arrogance. That's what it was for me. And I think in There's a Solution at the bottom of page 25, it says it perfectly. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. So these are our two choices. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness, the awareness, right? The being awake to our intolerable situation. Basically, it was, okay, I can go back into a coma with food. Like, let me just not be alive, be the walking dead, you know? And I wanted to do that as best I could. And the other is to accept spiritual help, right? So it's either go back to the food and not experiencing life as though you're living, or the other one is to accept spiritual help. And okay, and the other thing is, can, you know, well, can't we just maintain it? Like, why do I have to grow? And, you know, in the chapter Into Action on page 85, it says, yeah, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on your laurels, but we're headed for a fall if we do. So, you know, of course, with us, easy is not better. We learned that in this program, that easy it does not equal better for us. We were always looking for the easier, softer way. So yeah, it's easy to let up on our program of action. And is it hard to maintain commitment to a spiritual program of action? Yes, it can be. It can be. I'm not talking about hard to follow a food plan. I'm talking about hard to follow a spiritual program of action. You know, and so there's times, and I'll give you an example what I mean by difficulty committing to spiritual program of action. It is extraordinarily tempting to join in the gossip in the workplace, the gossip in the family. That for me these days has a stronger pull than the food, right? And it would be really easy for me to join my colleagues, you know, because they're, you know, I was sharing this, a friend was sharing this, her experience. She's sitting in her office and she hears the other people having fun, laughing together, complaining about something, a colleague, a work situation. I have that same thing all the time. And it would be so easy to get up from my spot and go join my friends and my colleagues in their gossip, right? But that's actually not a commitment to my spiritual action. Because my spiritual action tells me that's not aligned with my ideals anymore, right? And that if I do that, I'm going to be in trouble. It's going to start leading me into real trouble. You know, so it's hard to be committed to this spiritual program of action. And it can be especially hard if we don't give ourselves over to this way of life. If you're sitting here saying, okay, that's not what I came here for. I don't want to hear her talk to me about gossip. Talk to me again about the shirt tucked in the skirt. That I want to hear more about. Talk to me about what she eats. Tell me what you eat, right? But that's not the spiritual program of action. That's the toe in the door. What I eat is the most, you know, it's the most inconsequential part of the dialogue. It is not the spiritual program of action. And so we have to give ourselves completely over to this way of life. What does that mean, right? Well, if I want to enjoy the results, then the way of life that I'm giving myself over to is the way of life that I decided to embark on in step three. When I said to God, when I said to my creator, okay, here I am, just take me. I want what you want. I want to say what you want me to say. I want to think what you want me to think. I want to be what you want me to be. Right? That, when I give myself over in that way, taking these actions, they're not as difficult because when they feel challenging and tempting, I can actually call upon willpower, not to keep me from eating, but to chase God's will. So I can say in that moment, oh God, I want to join my friends in the hall because they're talking and they're laughing about our boss. And if I join them, I won't feel alone. I'll feel connected to them. But if I lean into God, what I hear is, that's not what I designed you to do. That's not what I built you to be, right? And now, do I fall short of the mark? Of course I do. Of course I do. But if I say I'm not interested in that and I dismiss it entirely, it becomes ever harder. Right? But if at least I'm seeking, if at least I'm attempting and I'm trying and I'm willing to make amends and I'm willing to say I'm sorry and do better, okay, then I'm moving towards spirituality and growth. You know, and what we find out is that this disease that we have is progressive. And in the introduction, I heard two people share very concrete examples of the progressive nature of their disease. And that's why we're here, right? That's why we're all here. What I heard somebody share was they used to be able to just binge at night, and holy smokes, now it's getting earlier and earlier in the day, right? And I don't even know if I'm willing to do anything about it, but I'm giving it a shot, right? That's the progressive nature of this thing. And that's what happens, you know, over time, our disease gets worse. It doesn't get better. Anybody who left the rooms and then decides to come back, they never come back better. They never come back. I have never left and then returned thinner. Never. And I've never left and returned saner. Right? I've always been crazier and heavier. So my disease is progressive, but it's also progressing right here and right now. This disease is progressive. So if I sit back on my laurels and I don't try to strengthen my spirituality, my disease will win out. The only thing, the only line of defense I have is to strengthen my spirituality. That's why it's so important. Okay, so now in the family afterwards, we're going to get some ideas about why we want to have a spiritual mode of living. And it's the same reason why we're all here. And it's in the family afterwards on page 133. It's just a little part. It says, we are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is a most powerful health restorative. So if we want to restore our health, we're here because most of us are here because our bodies were not very healthy. And that was the thing that got our attention first, right? Sometimes it was overweight, sometimes it was underweight, but it was generally the health pressing problem that got our initial attention. And so we know that the spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restoration we have, the most health restorative we have. Okay, so now what is spirituality? I've spoken to you at length about all these sort of modes of living and these ideas. So what does it mean, right? Well, interestingly enough, when I was originally doing this topic way back, I got a text from a fellow. I don't even know if she's on now, but she sent me, she's a friend from Hawaii, and she sent me a text. And I had spoken with her earlier that day, and earlier in that day, she called me because she was on the fence about between two choices she had. She was pressed between two choices. One was doing what was right. She was in this situation where she was supposed to do something, and it was really practicing integrity, which is God's will. God's will is for us to practice integrity, right? But she had this other thing that she wanted to do instead. She was like, oh, I want to do this, but I'm supposed to be doing this. And, you know, as it turns out, you know, doing what was right, doing the thing that had integrity, meant participating in a professional training. And the professional training happened to be about suicide prevention. And so her and I had discussed this together, and she said, yeah, I guess it really is other-centered if I go to that thing, even if I don't want to. And I'm supposed to be there anyway. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like you're supposed to be. And then she sends me a text. And during her training, the topic of spirituality was discussed. And funny enough, I was working on trying to create this talk, right? And she sends me the, I mean, there's no coincidence. So she sends me a text and she says, because I said to her, oh, do me a favor, when you go to this thing, send me, like, you want to have some, you know, like accountability, send me something interesting that you learn that you think maybe I can apply it somewhere. So she was like, oh, okay, I'll do that then, right? So she sends me this text. By the way, she didn't know that I was working on a talk about spirituality. Here's the text she sent me. Spirituality is the divine mystery of life of how one feels a part of something greater. And I was like, oh my gosh. So she's sending me a text about feeling a part of something greater. And that was exactly what she was in the process of doing. She was bringing me information she had no idea that I was even looking for, that I was even researching. And, you know, and so for me, those are the constant reassurances that God gives us when we practice integrity, when we do the thing that's right. It's like we get, I always get information that, yes, that is right. Yes, just like I said, we never come back to the rooms better, right? I never come back to them. When I'm out there alone, I never come back here better. Here's the thing. When I practice integrity, I always improve. I always improve, right? When I live in agreement with God's will for me, which is practicing integrity, I always improve. And that's spirituality, the improvement. So spirituality is also defined as the deepest values and meanings by which people live. There's another meaning that we have for spirituality, and it's the process of awakening from the ordinary, right? We get awakened to these new lives that are extraordinary. And, you know, spirituality can also mean the process of making the mind free from fears, from worries and nonstop thinking and experiencing inner peace and bliss in one's everyday life. I just love that. You know, some traditions consider spirituality as the search to know your real self, to discover the true nature of consciousness and gain awakening. You know, spirituality is awakening to who God had created me to be. That's what I think about spirituality is. It's like I get woken up to the person I was supposed to be. And there's a solution on page 27. We're also told what spiritual experiences are. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. So spirituality could be defined as godly directed ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which now guide my life and dominate me and get me to behave and do differently. You know, and I like to define spirituality as this. If my faith, remember I defined faith before, is an internal belief, then spirituality is the external demonstration of those beliefs, right? Spirituality is the action that matches what my beliefs are, which is why we're told belief is not enough. It's got to be a spiritual action, right? So if my belief is that I am now in the world to play the role God assigned me, right? Because that's what we come to be to find out, which for us is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service, then spirituality means going out and being useful, right? Returning. So how can you strengthen your spirituality? Like you're sitting here right now and you're like, okay, well, I haven't had an awakening and I'm like, you're talking at me and I'm not really sure. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Okay. You want to be useful, right? Return calls. Anybody can do that. Work with newcomers. If you're here for 5 minutes, call someone who's out there still, right? Helping long-timers reignite their passion, right? Sometimes we see people, they've been in the rooms for a really long time, and they say, yeah, I don't know. I'm getting tired of these meetings, right? Okay, you can help reignite their passion. I can strengthen my spirituality. The best way is with working with others. That's the way we strengthen our spirituality. On page 98 in the chapter Working with Others, it says he should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And boy, we know something about plagues these days, right? Everybody here clearly knows how we avoid plagues, right? We do all sorts of things to avoid a plague. Well, if I want to strengthen my spirituality, my spiritual demonstration, then I want to avoid arguing and fault finding. Those avoidances will strengthen my spirituality. So to strengthen our spirituality, we don't argue and find fault with others. This is especially important in situations where it's tempting to have our negative thoughts heard, right? To have my voice heard. I need to refrain from pointing out sometimes that I'm entitled to get my voice heard, right? Especially when it's a negative thing that I want to share. I need to refrain that, someone said earlier that they've noticed in meetings that there's a people, we refrain from talking about religion unless it's bashing, right? We refrain from talking about other ideas unless it's bashing. And actually, that is not aligned with strengthening our spirituality. There should be no bashing. We should not bash another 12-step way of doing it, another group of OA, another group of anything, right? Because that does not strengthen our spirituality. Shouldn't bash my boss, shouldn't, bash a colleague, an idea, a political thing in general, right? We're supposed to avoid that to strengthen our spirituality, like the plague. I'm supposed to avoid it like the plague. It makes me think of in the 11th step prayer, and the meditation when we do on St. Francis prayer, that I don't need to seek to be heard. I don't need to seek to be loved, and I don't need to seek to be understood. In fact, my spiritual path demands instead that I do the listening, I do the loving, and I do the understanding, regardless of how it's received. Which that's hard, right? That's where it takes like some action, some difficult action. In step 11 in the AA 12 and 12, it's so beautiful because it breaks down that St. Francis prayer and it really talks about how you can meditate on it. And I love the St. Francis prayer is just like one of my absolute favorites. And there are so many beautiful meditations available on apps, on there's a beautiful on YouTube, I happen to like Sarah McLachlan. She sings a version of the St. Francis prayer. It's gorgeous. I just love so much of what that prayer says. It really speaks to spirituality. In the big book, in the chapter How It Works on page 63, it says, we find it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as a wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. Okay, what spiritual step are they referring to? Well, if you go to the paragraph that came before, it says, we're now at step three. So many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me from the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we are ready, that we could at last utterly abandon ourselves to him. So taking a third step in community is one way that we can strengthen our spirituality. And it works for more than just the newcomer, taking it, you know, for their first time, but also for the one who's receiving it from the newcomer. I am really fond of a particular practice that many of us have done where we take our third step with other people. And I love when we do it. I always suggest to my sponsees, it was shared with me, so that's why I pass it, that they do it with three other fellows and then with me. And that is a gift that gives to the three other people as well, right? It helps them because they're part of this spiritual community, this shared endeavor. And it's such a beautiful thing because oftentimes what we do is we pray for them that they can utterly abandon themselves. And so it really becomes a very powerful exercise. And if you haven't done it, if you are in a recovered state and you haven't been a witness to someone else's third step, or even you don't have to be recovered to do that. You can be, I would say, a little further on your path to do that with somebody. It's a beautiful thing to do together. It really is. In Bill's story, on page 14 through 15, it says, "For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, you could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead." So spirituality strengthens, yep, through tough times, but not if you go off alone in your tough times, right? It strengthens if you work with others through those tough times, through sponsorship, through helping other people, particularly if you're giving up your free time. That's the greatest sacrifice that we have, time. You know, the miracle, by the way, of this kind of service, of giving of our time, is that when it's practiced repeatedly, it becomes a source of joy. And anybody here who has been able to sponsor and work with others know exactly what I'm speaking about. And it's mind-boggling how it happens, how it goes. A new sponsee recovers and they say, "I don't know if I want to do this. I don't feel equipped to do it. I don't really want to." And you urge them, you kind of give them a little kick out the nest because they have to, because if they don't, they're going to return to the food and we know it. And then sure enough, they start telling you, "Oh my God, this is the bright spot. This is amazing. I never want to stop sponsoring," right? In the family afterward, on page 129, it says, "He will perceive," now it's talking about a recovered person, "that his spiritual growth is lopsided, that for an average man like himself, a spiritual life which does not include his family obligations may not be so perfect after all." So we actually strengthen our spirituality when we meet our family obligations. And we're told that in step 12, to practice these principles in all our affairs. So when we fulfill our family obligations, we are growing spiritually. And if your family is being horribly neglected and uncared for, then your spiritual growth is lopsided. And sometimes we have to turn off our phones and tend to the needs of our families, right? And oftentimes I get asked, how do you balance everything? Imperfectly, right? But I try, when I'm with my kids, and they're very often we're in the car, right? I'm in the car, and that seems to be when they want to tell me something. Like I could ask them, when they come home, anything going on? No, nothing. Everything's great. Everything's great. Somehow I'm driving, and from the back seat, this happens when they were little, they just start telling me something. It is that for me is where I grow spiritually when I shut off the phone, and I tell someone who called me, look, I can't talk right now, my kid's in the car, and I give them my time and attention, right? Sometimes spiritual growth for me is in the morning. I try to listen. I love Vision for You. I think it's an awesome meeting. I try very hard. It's part of my, I enjoy it. I shouldn't even say I try very hard. I like listening to it every morning. Sometimes my husband wants to talk to me at that moment. And I'm like, it's actually spiritual. He understands what I'm doing. But I might get like a good 10 minutes where he really wants to tell me something. I gotta shut it off and listen to him. Right? And the same thing if a sponsee needs you. If a sponsee's in trouble and you have a meeting that you listen to, or you have no other time to take a fifth step and it causes you that you're going to have to miss the meeting. A meeting is awesome. I love that we're all here together. But if given a choice between working with another, we have to opt for the working with another, right? So when my husband needs my time and attention, I thank God the meeting's recorded. And I can shut it off and give him my time and attention. That's spiritual growth. Spirituality is also the actions taken in community, in recovery community. It's not a solitary endeavor. In the AA 12 and 12, step 5, page 60, it says, going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. And then in the big book, in Working with Others, page 100, it tells us both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. So both of them tell me that this is a community, that you're doing this action together. And there's a reason why I could not recover alone, right? Why out there you couldn't do it? Because we're not meant to do it alone. Human beings are social animals. It's the way that we were designed. I say like we're not snakes and we're not tigers and we're not, I don't even know if tigers live in isolation, but I think they do. We're not the kind of animals that thrive independent on their own. We live in community. We must have community. Our disease, however, thrives in isolation. It loves to get us alone because we're living outside the way that we were supposed to be living. We're living outside. When we're alone, we're living outside the way that God had intended us. And so here's what the disease likes to do. It likes to cut me off from my fellow man. Here's what it does. It lives in a lie and in a small imperfection or mistake that I make. And here's what it whispers to me. Shh, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. If you tell them, they won't like you. That's what it tells me. It tells me you have to be perfect in order to have a seat. That's what the disease tells me. But spiritual strengthening is a shared endeavor. And I grow spiritually when I demonstrate faith that if I tell the truth, I'm gonna be okay. Even if the person I confess my truth to has a diminished opinion of me, I'm still gonna be okay, right? Because I'm living in integrity. But the crazy thing is, when we are honest and we tell the truth about ourselves, when we reveal who we are, the opposite happens. People find themselves wanting to be closer to us. Nobody demands perfection from us. The only thing that demands perfection is the disease. It demands perfect fidelity to it, perfect self-sufficiency to it, perfect isolation. And I can never grow spiritually when I'm alone and cut off that way, right? So I love, you know, what happens for me when I share my truth with another person and they share their truth with me, we grow. We grow. You know, and it says in Proverbs, you know, that as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Right? And with that, I'm going to pass.